The petrol raced down the siphon hose as if it was having fun. For me, it was quite serious. I glanced past my leg to count the containers I had left. There were 4. 80 litres. Depending on how heavy the terrain is, that means between 300 and 500 kilometres. I've been meandering quite a lot, and the nearest refill point now lay some 80 kilometres back, and it was heavy bush driving. Ahead of me was only untamed wilderness. I dare not venture deeper than another 100 kilometres or so. Over the years of wandering the wilderness, I've come to adopt certain rules or habits. Some of them have to do with comfort, some with being in an environment where the rhythms and forces and wonders far exceed my abilities to comprehend them or oppose them, and yet it is so very fragile to what I bring to it. Many of the rules have to do with survival. Some of these I've learned through experience, mostly of the bad sort. They are what have to keep me alive. One such rule is the rule of petrol, which is always make sure you have enough petrol left to get to the next reliable replenishing point. I've learned over the years to keep updating my estimate, depending on the situation, and to then keep a reserve of some 20 or 40 litres, depending on the distance and the situation. And this petrol is sacred. It can only be used to get back to a refill point. Now, I will put in this container and one more. The rest is for getting out. The gurgling has now changed to a stutter. The last bit of petrol has been sucked out of the container. This doesn't sound merry anymore. It sounds more like ominous. As I lift the next container onto the roof, I remembered a time with Gerard and myself in the Nwanetsi Valley in Zimbabwe towards the end of the 70s. I will tell you a little anecdote from my book, The Wanderers. We had been driving around quite a lot, and we needed to replenish our stock of petrol. On our way into the area, we had passed a little shop. To my delight, outside the little shop was a 40s era petrol pump, a red one with twin glass measuring cylinders and a crank handle. Its red paint was faded and it was flecked with rust in spots, and its body had a few dents, but it still stood tall and it was functioning. It was a real classic. We loaded our 44-gallon drum, which we had brought along for petrol, and we left our camp at just before dawn. And we got to the little shop just before noon. It turned out they'd run out of petrol, which was to be expected, I guess. But the proprietor was very keen to not lose this big transaction, and he assured us the petrol truck was coming. We thought, well, okay, in that case, it's worth waiting for a bit. So we got out our chairs and we made ourselves at home under the only tree that was there, which I think was, if I recall correctly, a wild olive. And we started brewing some tea. The proprietor sent us each a can of lukewarm Coke to show his appreciation for his really big customers. We had a tracker with us, a guy called Nyani. Now, he wasn't the best tracker I'd ever worked with, but he was very pleasant and had a brilliant white smile and laughing eyes. And like most Zimbabweans, he could speak good English, which was a bonus. Anyway, he was delighted because he ended up scoring the Cokes. Once we had settled down in our chairs with the tea, I had a look at our surroundings with a little bit more attention to detail. It is strange how the average Western mind tends to filter out detail that is not relevant to the immediate issue at hand. Because in that way, we miss a lot of charming detail. Now, our tree was about 60 or so paces away from the little shop. It was across the road from us, and this road led eastwards into the oblivion of the tribal trust lands. The area around us was completely barren, except for a few grey shrubs and some mounds of donkey dung, which had been deposited by some specimens which are quite scrawny looking and standing around dejectedly. I don't know quite why, because there was certainly nothing for them to eat in the area. The little shop itself was every bit as classical as the petrol pump. Its sign hung from a single nail. Its veranda cement was cracked in several places. Its walls in some places had its plaster fall off and showed the red bricks underneath. It was very clear that it hadn't received any maintenance since the last owner had left, I guess, for South Africa or England or such. On the veranda, there was the usual crowd of sunglasses sporting loafers and a group of men playing some game quite noisily on the concrete floor, and they were whirled by quite a few bottles of beer. But apart from them, there was a line of people sitting in this narrow strip of shade on the side of the shop. They all had bundles of stuff with them. One had a small cage of mesh and wood in which there were with three chickens. I asked Nyani what they were doing there. "Oh, they are waiting for the bus to come, sir," he said. They have such delightful manners, these Zimbabweans. "Oh, and when is the bus coming?" "The bus is coming, sir." I looked down the track expectantly, but then I realized that the answer didn't mean that the arrival was imminent. It meant that the bus could come now, or possibly later today, or maybe tomorrow, or maybe sometime this week. I asked Nyani, "So Nyani, the petrol truck, when do you think it is coming?" His answer was telling. "Ah, but it is coming, sir." Gerard hadn't been paying much attention, but now I told him, "You know what this means. It means that the bloody truck could be arriving today or tomorrow or sometime this week. We don't know, maybe even next week." Now he was paying attention. "Damn, we better make another plan," he snorted. So I asked Nyani where else we could get petrol. "Maybe we can get it in Munezi, sir," he said. "Oh, and how long would it take to drive there?" He screwed his face into intense concentration. "Maybe 2 hours or three, sir." "Okay, sounds like about 60 to 80 k's. "Shit, that's quite a way. Do you think we can make it with the petrol we have in the tank?" Gerard was asked. I thought it was risky. "And if we got stuck between here and Munezi, we'd be in real trouble. It could take days before we can get going again." "But you know what? I remember an occasion when I was a little boy. I had a great uncle that farmed on the farm next to us. He was my grandfather's brother. He regularly sent for me to come and help him. Actually, it meant I got sent around for convenience to do little errands. Anyway, he had to deliver a load of hay, but his old GMC lorry didn't have enough petrol in it to make it to the petrol pump. So all Umtaste did was to run the truck warm a bit and then to put some diesel into the tank, just enough so that he could get to the petrol pump. Gerard looked at me uncertainly. Wrachtach, he said. You're sure that wouldn't damage the engine? Of course, I wouldn't do anything to damage the engine, and he realized that. Not really, I said. Of course, if there was too much diesel, it just wouldn't run. Okay, we don't have any diesel. Gerard sounded quite relieved, actually. So I said, no, but maybe they have some at the store. He was now less sure of himself. Okay, well, let's try. Our host at the store, the proprietor, took the news of the big transaction was off rather badly. After all, the truck was about to arrive. It was definitely in our best interest to just wait for it, he assured us. We didn't really bite, and after some inquiries, we found out he had a stock of power paraffin for his pump. He insisted that we go with him to have a look at the installation. There was a little footpath, well-worn footpath, running through the bush, and we arrived at a little pump house of red bricks. You could hardly see it, so fiercely it was overgrown. One wall had been pushed over by a tree, and some of the corrugated iron sheets for the roof had been removed for something else. The pump house stood on the edge of a little depression that filled up with water in the rainy season, so it was treeless. We couldn't get into the pump house to look at the engine, because the floor was under about 2 inches of water. Our host assured us that it only leaked a little bit when it was running. I could make out that it was probably an old Lister, and it was driving a turbine pump, which I couldn't make out the origin of, through a V-belt, and plus a leather, rawhide leather thong that augmented the V-belt. The installation was in a state. It was missing some bolts and nuts. Some had been replaced by incorrectly sized ones. Others had been driven in with a hammer, it seemed. And of course, there were lots of wire that kept the whole thing together. The whole thing was covered in a layer of thick black oil and dust. Just to witness this installation, still functioning after all these years, was a revelation. It must be far beyond the estimates of the designers, the conditions and period over which it had actually kept running. Our host now insisted that the operator that he had brought along must start it so that we can see it in operation. The operator was clearly highly skilled in this little exercise. The first step was to swap from the paraffin to petrol to start the engine. Now, the old Lister had a two-way brass valve to do this, but that had long since been worn out and thrown away. So now the swap was done by pulling out the paraffin line and plugging in the petrol line, and then putting a plug that was removed from the petrol line into the paraffin one to prevent the paraffin from running out. Now, I looked around for the crank, and I finally found it where it was lying among the debris of the pushed over wall in the water. But it wasn't recognizable as a crank anymore. It had been used as a hammer and a lever and various other things over the years. And the operator didn't even look at it. He simply took a long rawhide thong from a nail on the wall, and he wound this around the flywheel. Then he pulled on the thong, changing his hands very rapidly and how very skillfully, and so cranked the old engine. And it very quickly caught on and chugged away quite merrily. So now the next step was to swap back to paraffin. To do this, the fuel line change operation had to be repeated. But now, of course, the engine died when its supply of paraffin was cut off. And then the rawhide routine also had to be repeated. But the engine was now warm, so it caught on quickly and it was running along sweetly. Our host's attitude was much improved by Gerrit and my chuckling and exclaiming. I don't think he quite understood what the motivation for that was. But anyway, it also helped when we said we would buy 10 litres of his power paraffin at the petrol price. He told the operator to measure out the right quantity and bring it to our vehicle. Now we took the 10 litres of power paraffin, we added a litre of methylated spirits and a half a litre of cooking oil we had with us at the back, and we warmed up the engine, and then we poured in our mixture, and off we went. Gerrit was driving as carefully as possible without dropping the revs too much, and we were both holding thumbs and rehearsing our prayers. Anyway, we got to Mwenezi, stuttering and shuddering a bit, but we made it. And fortunately, at that little store, similar to the other one, they had some petrol. And we were able to fill up, and we took off again back into the bush. And now we each had a cold Coke from their fridge. When we drove past the little shop by the roadside, the petrol truck had still not arrived.